You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
Hi, this is Sidney Finkelstein. Welcome to another edition of Sid Weighs In, where I get to talk about in podcast form some of what I've been writing about in the BBC column. Today, as guest host, we have Kira O'Brien. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning, Professor. Thanks for having me.
Now, if we're going to do a podcast together, Kira, you got to call me Sid.
Okay, I'll get used to it. It's a little hard. I'm a Tuck student as well, so, you know, we always like to call you Professor.
What types of work are you doing? What are you thinking about doing, Kira?
So at the moment, I'm in my second year at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth, and I've come from the media business, but I am on my way to consulting. So pretty excited about that and been learning a lot here at the school. So today we're going to talk a little bit about one of the columns that you wrote on looking at Davos and the kind of World Economic Forum conference that's been happening there. So it's been a bit of an institution for kind of top-tier business leaders for a long time, but there's sort of a question about what really that kind of high price of admission is and what's it achieving. So there's a bit of a halo around it, and we'd love to hear what you really think on that front.
Well, Davos has become the Woodstock of high-level discussion, and everyone seems to be going there, except for me. So, what's good about it? It's a place where lots and lots of people, because they are CEOs, senior executives, politicians, they get together and they could talk to all sorts of people at the same time. That's obviously very efficient. But if you want to have the definition of kind of a hyper-elite world, not the 1%, but the 0.01%, that's what Davos is. And my sense of it is that being seen seems to be at least as important, if not more so, than what actually goes on. And that's some of what I wanted to talk about today.
Great. So with the political leaders giving kind of uplifting speeches, and we've got business leaders coming together to shake hands, and Charlize Theron coming to ring the bell, we'd love to hear your column on it.
Why Davos? The Instagram generation has a habit of using acronyms. YOLO is a popular one as a stand-in for sometimes complex emotions. So going by this, you only live once, is all the justification you need for experimentation or extreme effort that might otherwise seem questionable. Well, with the annual World Economic Forum conference in Davos now in full swing, perhaps it's time to borrow FOMO from the millennials to explain the astonishing list of chief executives of profit and nonprofit enterprises, government leaders, journalists, and entrepreneurs who descend on the Swiss mountain village to participate, regardless of whether they're really contributing much to the occasion. FOMO is the fear of missing out. Yes, there's real business that gets done, but really, does J.P. Morgan Chase & Company CEO Jamie Dimon really need to go to Davos to meet all these other business leaders? How about former U.S. President Bill Clinton, who often attends this gathering? Is there anyone he has trouble getting a hold on that warrants a trip to Switzerland? Davos exists because its carefully nurtured target market wants it to exist. And once it gets stamped with the must-go label for global elites, that target market feels compelled to keep going. In other words, if you're not there, well, then maybe you're not so important after all. If this all sounds familiar to you, well, you know, it should, at least if you went to high school or secondary school. Remember that party that all the cool kids were going to? The one that you really wanted to attend to? The pleasure of the party came more from being included than anything else that actually went on during the event. Like Davos, it becomes important not because it is important, but because high-status people deem it to be important. The party organizers have all the incentives to keep the elites coming, not the least because it signals that they themselves are members of the in-group. That's why the Davos Brain Trust is busy producing white papers and organizing conference themes. These efforts provide cover for what really goes on in such gatherings. Perpetuation of such regular parties requires a kind of pseudo-authenticity to assure everyone who's watching, and maybe even more so everyone in attendance, of the legitimacy of the entire enterprise. And it really is an enterprise, with a budget of an astounding $185 million, generated from an effective $71,000 cost per person just to attend. That is, if you want to do anything more than sign in. The price rises almost as fast as bonuses accrue for professional athletes during the four-day meeting. It is an enterprise, with a budget of an astounding $185 million, generated from an effective $71,000 cost per person just to attend. If you want to do anything more than sign in, however, the price rises almost as fast as bonuses accrue for professional athletes for the four-day meeting. TED Talks, which feature leading thinkers who share their ideas with the aim of inspiring or teaching others, have some of this flavor, but at least with TED, the choreography and the culture are focused on trying to deliver quality content. Davos, on the other hand, is largely about people who immerse themselves with others for the express purpose of immersing themselves with others. With rare exceptions, it's not about the content and the ideas, but rather the process and the interaction. Well, the Davos effect is not unique. In every walk of life, people seek to join exclusive groups that make them feel better about themselves. These groups are not necessarily created to exclude others, but that's often the effect. Perhaps you're a member of a book club. I know it can be more difficult to discuss a book once the group gets too big, but did you ever decide not to let someone new join because of the psychic benefits of exclusivity? Do you feel a sense of belonging and even a degree of importance that you're part of your book club? Why do so many retired executives want to be on boards of directors? Yes, you do get paid, sometimes substantially, but you can also join one of the most exclusive clubs that exist in any organization. The fact that boards have relatively few members only makes it feel like a better gig because it means many others just can't get in. In each instance, members of the group gain status, in part by ensuring that there are others who are not part of the group. It's human nature. Research by a colleague of mine, Judith White, shows how people identify status differences within similar groups. For example, in one study, she shows that vegans actually resent vegetarians. Now, for most of us, technical differences aside, vegans and vegetarians are pretty much the same group. But it turns out that vegans view vegetarians as having sold out for not being as pure in their dietary restrictions. That's probably why the term vegan was coined in the first place, as a signal that members of this group were of a different and higher status. Even at Davos, there are chasms among people. The organizers have actually institutionalized this via the color of the badges delegates wear, perhaps because Davos is such an extreme example of status hierarchies. If you've got an orange badge, working journalist, or light blue badge, a volunteer, don't even think about striking up a conversation with someone sporting a white badge complete with blue line and dot, a trifecta of garb reserved for strategic partners who typically pay $500,000 or more for the privilege. All of this would be utterly ridiculous if it weren't absolutely true. Davos is no different than countless other structures people put in place to enhance their status. Despite that, or probably because of that, those left on the outside looking in experience FOMO at its finest. I know I sure wish I were invited to Davos this week.
Great. Really fascinating. Thank you for that. So as you're talking through it, I kind of thought about some parallels to my own recent experience. So as an MBA student, and one of the things I was thinking about is that Davos really seems to kind of strike a parallel to that kind of high price of an MBA program, as well as the exclusivity that comes around it, particularly a top 10 business school program. So what do you think about that as a business school professor? Are we sort of setting a golden fence around all future leaders? Am I going to be a future Davos attendee?
Well, Kira, it's an interesting question because naturally top MBA programs like Tuck are much more inclusive and involving of all sorts of people than Davos. I get what you're saying because, you know, top business schools are certainly elite and try to attract among the best students in the world. But on at least two or three dimensions, there's an important difference. First of all, actually, the student pool in top schools is very diverse. There are scholarships, of course, and other ways of attracting students or making it possible for students to attend an MBA program who are not in the 1%, let alone the 0.1%. I think, in addition, Tuck School in particular has a long tradition of community involvement, lots of opportunities for people to participate, and I know, speaking as a teacher and as an administrator as well at Tuck, we certainly hope that our students are going to set out to change the world with deep respect for all kinds of other people that may not have had the same opportunities.
And I can definitely see what you're saying. So, you know, we work on a lot of external projects, for example, with different students from school, other schools, with consulting projects, nonprofit work. We have guest speakers coming all the time from different walks of life. So maybe the kind of answer for Davos is that it needs to have more voices included in the same way that a top business school program can.
You know, the thing that gets me about Davos is how it's really become, and this is what the column, the BBC column, is really all about. It's become just a place to be seen and to see and be heard. And I don't think that's the best place to actually accomplish goals. I think authenticity, I think real involvement, I think people that are all in and not just there because they need to be there is what it's all about. And guess what? The Tuck School is exactly like that.
Do you see it needing maybe a series of events? Do you see business leaders, do you see any place, I guess I would say, for business leaders to kind of be seen? Is that not important as well from, you know, a signaling point of view, from a branding point of view? We want to make sure that these people are known and that their voices do have impact potentially.
Well, you know, if I'm a CEO, I want to be speaking out about important issues for all of my stakeholders. And I think being seen kind of hanging out in Davos with millionaires and billionaires doesn't necessarily convey exactly what I'd want.
Good skiing, though.
Got it. Thanks a lot, Kira.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.